The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Climate Matters number 137. I'm Lindsay Wood. I'm the Director of Climate Strategy Company Resilience Limited. And Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Well, today we're going into a bit of a potpourri of articles. Here's what we're going to cover. We'll revisit climate experts talking about local body issues. That is a flashback to the 2022 elections and the big series we ran there. And I've extracted bits because we're running into another local government election. Then there's a double whammy on global warmers and global coolers. More about that. Think like a forest. We'll talk about the recloaking Papatūānuku project a little bit. The reason it's a little bit is that actually this will be broadcast after the film has premiered. So more on that in a minute. Artificial organic coatings that might sequester carbon two ways. A bit of a scientific geeky look at things there. I'm going to report on Human Nature, a marvelous book that I'm just reading. And then another outstanding college student. You remember, you may recall that a couple of weeks ago, we had the Areri college student talking about when her island might be just a story. And now we are going to listen to Leo Mwapi. Well, not listen to him. I'll talk about it. And then a plug again for the Not Your Normal Candidates meeting in the Nelson region. So let's get into it. Here's what we're going to do. First of all, climate insights for the local government elections. So just to recap, last election, I had the terrific and good fortune to interview 16 different specialists. They're climate specialists mostly, or related fields, and they were giving their take on climate change and local government to inform how we might think about the coming elections. There's lots of good material there. I will give a link to the whole series, which is on the Resilience website, resilience.co.nz. And if you navigate through, I think it's the Resilience Climate Trust, and you'll find Climate and Councils. There'll also be a link on the Fresh FM webpage. Each interview is about half an hour. We covered a whole lot of people, ranging from James Shaw when he was Minister for Climate Change through to Professor Bronwyn Hayward, summing it all up. And she was an IPCC lead author, as was Professor James Renwick, who also was on the series. Anyway, we'll give you extracts from them. And for starters today, I'm going to just slide in. The first time I've ever done that is bring in a clip from outside and inserted it into this recording. So it will be two clips from the late Rod Oram. Now, you may recall Rod was a commentator par excellence on business and climate. He had no peer in the country. And the first clip is one we are just about to play where I had asked how businesses might get a handle on what lies ahead for them in the climate space and what options they might have for dealing with it. So let's listen to Rod for a moment.
I would start with, you know, embracing, living the change, being ambitious in what you're trying to do and collaborating very widely. But for local councils, it's that last one which is the most important, because we've got to build up the understanding, the enthusiasm for this amongst all of our friends and neighbours and other people in our region, so that politicians can then take the decisions they need to in full consultation with us. So we get the plans, we get the regulations, we get the need we help, But there, there's an even, in a sense, an even bigger change happening in politics and democracy, in that there is this early days, but very encouraging, very enlightening shifts towards people having a much greater role in what's decided and how it's decided. So that goes by various terms, such as participatory democracy or deliberative democracy, which goes far beyond just voting at your local election once every 3 years.
Yes.
Or perhaps turning up to a few council meetings or putting in a submission. But again, the political culture has to change there too, whereby politicians feel that they are far more the servant of the people, if you like, rather than elected to, you know, get stuff done.
Mm.
And again, it's this wonderful opportunity you have in a geographically coherent and varied region with a small population where those people-to-people connections are close, that, you know, you've got a wonderful opportunity to change the political culture. Because we've got to be able to agree on what we need to do over the long term, because these are long-term projects. And we can't be whipsawed around by short-term electoral politics or deeply embedded political ideologies. So there are some examples of some countries around the world which have achieved democracies, which have achieved a great deal of common agreement about what they're trying to do over time. And then the electoral cycle just becomes who's delivering best on that.
Mm.
And are the incumbents doing a good enough job on delivering that? So the election is not about, shall we have a big change of direction here or a big change of policy. We're talking about which bunch of politicians look like the most capable of delivering. My favorite example of that was Ireland in the 1980s and 1990s, but there are others around. And that to me is the key to this, is that regardless of parties we might be members of or what some of our deep-seated ideological principles might be in politics, we can reach agreement on what we're trying to do here. And then from that, you begin to get really good progress.
I really loved it when they said they are trying to make their future rather than defend their past. How much we need more of that. And then here's another clip when I also talking with Rod, and I had charged Rod with being a long-term policy advisor to local government in the quest to help their communities still flourish in 30 years' time. Here's what Rod had to say in response to that.
For me, the key message that I draw from the companies which I think are the very best of this, both at home and abroad, is that they understand that they don't know what all that entails. Right. So they're making very sure that they are very forward-looking. They're very attuned to things as they're developing. But they are very eager to embrace change as they see how to do it. They are ambitious in all that. But above all, they are very adaptable. And even most important of all, they understand that what they have been doing up till now may continue to some degree for them, and there will still be very useful skills and knowledge that transfers in this. But they're ready and eager to learn how to do almost everything differently. So to me, the most important mindset is that one about being very open and eager for change. So they're trying to make their future rather than defend their past. That, to me, is the overwhelming issue for businesses. So within that, there are those that embrace that change. They live that change. They set themselves goals that are dictated by the science. And that's where we come back to the likes of the Science-Based Target Initiative, which are establishing carbon emission reductions based on what the climate models are telling us. So that's where the science comes in. Mm-hmm. And they have no idea how they're going to do that. Mm-hmm. But unusually for businesses, they set themselves those goals, knowing that that focuses their mind, focuses their energy, focuses their investment on finding out how to do that. And then the last thing for me always and in many ways the best of all, is that they then collaborate very widely, because they know that the answers will lie quite likely outside their normal close links and close contacts, could be quite left field. But that's wonderfully liberating for them to be that open to where the knowledge, the help might come from.
Well, I hope you found those interesting. I'll try and do a few more clips over the next few weeks, but some of the episodes have already been pre-recorded, so that might be a bit tricky. Anyway, moving on, a mind-bending double whammy, climate coolers and climate warmers. In the Nature Journal, which we will give a link to in the Fresh FM webpage, they brought a remarkable and insight climate paper, one that touched on something very basic and I'd never seen it discussed before, how different emissions from one sector can create both global warming and global cooling, and how we'd better understand how that works if we want to mitigate climate harm effectively. There's an incredible Sankey diagram that I won't try and explain to you, but it shows the flow of greenhouse gases, both what they call warmers and coolers. It looks a bit like a snakes and ladder diagram on steroids. But anyway, in basically the situation is that if you take something like coal-fired electricity generation, which they cover under the category they call power, the burning the coal in those processes emits carbon dioxide. We know that it's a major contribution to global warming, but it also emits sulfur dioxide, which is known or termed in this article a global cooler. And that is because when it reaches the upper atmosphere, it actually has the effect of restricting how much sunlight actually gets through onto Earth. So that what this paper is talking about is that we can't just look at slashing the global warming greenhouse gases. We have to think of also how we handle the coolers. And here's a bit more that goes into it. Their research showed that the sulfur dioxide, that's the cooler from burning coal, counteracts around about half of the coal's carbon dioxide emissions, at least counteracts about the warming from half of the emissions. And when they translate that to the whole global warming phenomenon, the coolers cancel out about 33% of all current global warming. Now, in the short term, we should be very pleased about that, because without that cooling effect, it would be even worse. So that's something to think about, worse by about a third more heat in the atmosphere. However, if we, for example, get off burning coal for burning coal for power generation, both the coolers and the warmers emitted by the combustion of the fossil fuel will reduce in quantity. But, and here's the catch, carbon dioxide stays in the air for centuries after it is emitted. But sulfur dioxide abates in a matter of days. So what's going to happen if you imagine we suddenly stopped burning coal for power generation? We would stop the carbon dioxide. Gosh, we have to do that. We'd also stop the sulfur dioxide, and very quickly, the sulfur dioxide would disappear from the atmosphere, and with it would disappear the cooling effect it's had. So the net effect of that in the short term is actually an increase in warming, because the speed with which the coolers abate is much quicker than the speed with which the global warming carbon dioxide abates. Bit of a mind bender, isn't it? Just as a follow-up, agriculture, which the paper notes, and I'm quoting, emits few cooling species, i.e. gases and particulates. And when we think about that, it means that that's yet another reason to slash methane production as soon as we can, because that's a way of rapidly reducing warming without also reducing cooling effects. So if you get a chance to go on the Substack article, which we'll put a link to in the Fresh FM Climate Matters webpage, there's an amazing Sankey diagram, and it's not everybody's cup of tea, but if you like looking at graphs and charts, then you'll have plenty to look at there. Okay, moving on. As I mentioned, I'm going to report on a film. I haven't even seen the film yet, but it will have been screened, at least its premiere will have been screened when you listen to this broadcast. So I've titled it Seeing the Wood and the Trees, the premiere of the movie Think Like a Forest. And at a time when we've got so many things going backwards in the area of climate policy, it's great to have the initiative called Recloaking Papatua Nuku. And it's an initiative of Pure Advantage, which is a green business media organization. We've talked about them before. And it ticks a lot of boxes. Anyway, at 5:30 on the 20th of August, i.e. a week or so ago, they're expecting thousands to stream the launch of this film, which is being launched in the Beehive. And the film is a promotion for Recloaking Papatua Nuku. It's called Think Like a Forest, as I mentioned. And I'm so looking forward to it. The thing about Recloaking Papatua Nuku is worth spending a little time on. I will give a link to, for example, their business case. But it is very ambitious. It's talking about a very large-scale renewal of indigenous planting and native forest over a huge area. And that's hence the Recloaking Papatua Nuku, a great title for it. The estimate is this could potentially inject $12 billion into the local economy that would replace having to pay $24 billion offshore to buy carbon offsets, because if you look at the ETS system we've got and international carbon trading and so on, New Zealand is currently setting out to be so short on its emissions reductions that we'll have to pay probably $24 billion offshore. However, Recloaking Papatua Nuku has the potential to soak up a quarter of all of New Zealand's greenhouse gas emissions over the rest of this century. That is a big deal. So anyway, I do hope you get a chance to see the film Think Like a Forest. It's very much encouraged and available free for local screenings through organizations. So if you've got an environmental group or a film group or a climate group, then do get in touch with Pure Advantage and see what you can do. They'll give you promotional material and everything. It's very well put together. Okay, here's another mind-bending double whammy, and I've cautioned that if we look closely. This is a bit of a geeky dive, so hold on or pause for a minute if you don't want to hear it. Nature Communications, we'll give a link to that as well. It reports on what they called dual carbon sequestration with photosynthetic living materials. And in this case, the photosynthesis sequesters carbon just like it does with other plants. But also, as well as accumulating in biomass of the plant, the plant is geared to also form a rock deposit called a carbonate. And so we've got a situation where it's a very technically complex process, but it mixes biology and microengineering by 3D printing and complex shapes to yield a 3D printed organic carbon sequestering lattice. That is like a trellis, if you like, but on a tiny scale. And it could be, for example, a coating on construction materials. It sequesters carbon two ways, as I mentioned. Firstly, by photosynthesis, and secondly, by enzymes that convert the excretions from the organism into a carbonate, which in essence is the same as limestone. So there are some pictures. I won't try and explain them to you, but a thing that looks like a tiny thimble that starts off sort of soggy and almost colorless and then progressively gets greener until it stands right up as a little sort of firm structure. Anyway, the process sounds really good, sounds technically mind-blowing, But even though it's impressive, it's really far from ready to go in a useful way. After 400 days, it stores about 1/40th of its weight in carbon. Now, to give you a contrast, timber stores about half its weight in carbon. And then it's also reported as being less efficient than carbon capture and storage. And if you've been listening to this before, you'll know that carbon capture and storage is a long, long way from being viable at any scale that's useful in combating the climate crisis. So anyway, moving on, a marvelous book, Human Nature, and I will just read what I've said about it because it's terrific. With an author named Marvel, we might expect great things from human nature, and climate scientist Kate Marvel doesn't disappoint. From the get-go, her writing sparkles with imaginative language that breathes life into an extraordinary array of science, history, and emotion. And the emotional content is no accident, because the book's subtitle is 9 Ways to Feel About Our Changing Planet. And the 9 ways headline a chapter structure that deals with the different emotions one at a time. It starts on wonder. That's a lovely high note to start on. It goes through all sorts of others like fear and beauty and anger. And then it ends on love, a real roller coaster of feelings. Very beautifully written. In a way, it reminded me of Joely Gergis's book, Humanity's Moment. I reported on that a couple of years ago. Kate Marvel is all the better for blending her scientific insights and her passion for protecting planet Earth, because that brings a real lively dimension to the book. So I really encourage you to read it. Hopefully it's in libraries. It's very new, though. It's only out in the last 3 or 4 weeks. There's also, we'll give a link to a 7-minute interview with Kate Marvel, not by me, but on National Public Radio. It's a mixture of audio and text. So that's really recommended. And the final item here, I mentioned at the beginning, another inspirational college student. You may remember Climate Matters 135 brought to you a clip to the moving talk by student Philly Fepeleahi Tupaai. And that was about possibly her home island will become just a memory and a story. But I've just come across Leo Moapi from Palmerston North Boys High School. Equally compelling as Philly, equally impressive, talking in a very different area, which I'm not going to give it away. I'm going to encourage you to listen. But he hardly mentions climate, but he's championing a cause that is central to us successfully tackling it. Do check him out. 9 minutes long, and we'll give a link to that on the Climate Matters webpage. Okay, before we wrap up, I just want to remind you that on the 4th of September, keep the evening free. That's the night of the Not Your Normal Candidates meeting being run by Sustainable Transport Group, NELSUST. It's a great evening. It's got music. It's got entertainment. It's got serious politics with local government councillors. Most of the candidates have already accepted invitation to come along. And there will be supper at the end, 7 o'clock, at the Victory Community Centre on the 4th of September. No need to pre-book or anything. Just come along with an open mind and enjoy the mixture of entertainment and serious politics. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this episode of Climate Matters. As you know, it's brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Fresh FM broadcasts in Blenheim on 88.9, to Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It's also streamed to the planet on freshfm.co.nz, and podcasts of Climate Matters and of other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.co.nz and through the accessmedia.nz app. And on that note, that's me signing off, thanking you for your company, which of course I do hope I enjoy again next week. And as always, kia kaha for the climate.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.